Welcome to Highway Diary. I'm your host, Eric Hollerbach. Episode 54 with Calder Hallbrook.
Hello.
My main man.
I am here.
Now, right off the bat, I want to play a little video. This is Calder Hallbrook doing Toastmasters about the 70s. You had a very impassioned speech. Let's play it.
Now, I have to confess a bit of a secret. This is something my family doesn't like to talk about very much. The God's honest truth is that I was born in 1983. And so I was born maybe 3 or 4 years after, by all accounts, the genre of disco perished. So there are probably a lot of people in this room better qualified to say anything about the disco than me. I'm looking at this one over here. But the sad truth is, we live in a society that prizes its looks above any kind of substance, which is a terrible, terrible thing. But can any of you really say that there was someone in this room who looks more qualified to say something about disco or the 70s than me?
You've won several Toastmasters awards recently.
I've had a few victories, yeah.
Yeah, so this is like an entertaining speech contest.
Some of them are, and some of them are more supposed to be inspiring or dramatic. I'm not good at those. I'm better at the ones that are entertaining and frivolous.
So what are the, like, boundaries of what they're, you know?
Well,
what do they tell you are the rules? You know, dirty tactics? Are you allowed to insult your opponents?
You could, I guess, but it would probably not win you any favor with the judges. You have timing rules and you have parameters about what sort of stuff you're talking about. This recent contest had tall tales speeches, so you're supposed to do some kind of exaggerated story like Paul Bunyan.
Just make one up.
Basically.
The most epic story.
Yeah, and then there are ones that are basically improvised speeches. There are evaluations and things like that. That's about how it works.
Does it feel like a debates class kind of thing? Like,
a little bit. I mean, it can. You're not ever really, truly going head-to-head with someone. You're doing something, and then they're doing something, but you can't really impact how they do, and they can't impact how you do. It's more like if you were running a race against someone than if you were wrestling someone.
Now, is there any wrestling sections of the...
Only after the contest, if one person's not happy with how it went.
Or, like, if there's, like, a tie, then it's, like... oil wrestling.
I think that's when the bribes settle the difference.
Okay, I also want to say this. You're on Facebook all the time. You seem to have an affinity for vintage things. You have a photo album called My VHS Collection. You have a music video on your thing from 1989. Do you suffer from chronic nostalgia? Do you have a longing for the simple days when you would have to, you know?
In some ways, that's true. I think something that happens with me is I don't know if I have the... bravery is not the right word, but exactly. But when you are looking for new things, you're running the risk of constantly being disappointed by something new because it hasn't been vetted yet, you know? There's not a consensus on what's good and what's not good. And if you look back, like, a couple decades, we've already decided which were the good songs in the 80s or in the 70s or which were the good movies, and so you can just jump right to the top of the list instead of having to chance a bad one or something. So
I don't know what a good workout routine is, but I know my Tai Bo VHS is pretty solid when I want to get a sweat on. So it's like I wore out the tape.
Oh, man.
You know what I mean? Because it's just like if you're doing those movements and you want to see how Billy Blanks does them, you got to slow down. You got to rewind, fast forward, rewind. You know what I mean? And that wears out the tape.
Do you have the Buns of Steel tape?
I had the, I don't know, the kind of pseudo kickboxing one.
Nice. Yeah, that would be, if I did any sort of workouts, I would probably have to have a VHS tape of Billy Blanks.
Yeah, that's the way to get your groove on, man. But you also said, you seem to have a fear of the internet. You say, my God, internet, is there no end to your perversity? That's something that you posted to the wall. Now it seems like, you know, maybe there's like too much information on the internet and, you know, or you're a pervert and, you know, you're at the helm of that internet. So it can take you anywhere you want. And you're blaming the internet for being perverted. But you can kind of steer that ship where you want to go, you know?
That was a weird thing where, you know, what really leads you down some dark alleys is the you know, when you do a Google search and it starts trying to fill in what it thinks you're going to want.
Right.
And the things that it completes are things that presumably people are really searching. Or just like, in that case, that was a really weird thing because I was searching for something completely innocuous. I was actually trying to find the definition of the word cloture, which is it's a legal term. It just means we're not debating anymore. And so
when you're like preparing for a speech at Toastmasters, that's a word you got to look up.
Oh yeah, you want
to embellish your
you want to know what you're talking speech. About. And that actually it informed me that because of Safe Search, it had scrubbed some results, like that came from the word cloture. And I thought, what kind of disgusting stuff? What kind of cloture porn is there?
Yeah, we are ending this debate, man. Fucking.
I mean, that settles a lot of differences.
Yeah. This debate's over. Now I'm going to chop your head off. Speaking of chopping your head off.
Okay.
There's a video surfing around the internet right now, and I would play it, except the original video has no audio, so there's no point. But it's just a dolphin fucking a head of a fish. Now, a fish had been chopped in half, and it was like in an aquarium, so it was just like a fish to feed the other fish or whatever. So they chopped it in. So this dolphin goes up to the bottom of the thing where this fish head is settled, and then just started fucking the fish head.
And they say that dolphins are smart.
Yeah, well, dolphins also are using tools. That was the original thing of humans, was the definition of humans. Humans use tools. Then monkeys had sticks, and they were looking for ants.
And grubs.
Yeah. There you go. And then now, a dolphin's using a fish to like a fleshlight.
Everybody was all upset about those dolphins getting killed in that documentary. Now I wonder how they feel.
Yeah. Now they're a less sympathetic character now that there's these perverts at the bottom of the aquarium.
Turns out they're sick just like us.
Uh-huh. Imagine if a dolphin was on the internet, the kind of depraved shit it would
look
like.
Oh, man, we're just a couple of opposable thumbs away from really being awash in some disgusting stuff.
It would just be into weird stuff like coral erosion, you know?
I'll tell you this, I don't want to find out about dolphins' politics. I feel like that would really be the last straw.
Well, how do you think they're in pods, mainly.
Yeah,
a pod is a group of fish.
Yeah, they're social creatures.
Do you think
creatures.
That there's one, like, who's kind of head honcho?
Aye.
Like, you're gonna let me fuck your blowhole, guys. Like, that is how this economy works.
I wonder if they would be like a socialist collective or something. Can you imagine that? I wonder
if they share in each other's fish.
Like, you know, like that. Maybe that there really is no true leader. Like, it would be a pure like anarchist society.
Mm-hmm.
I bet that's what it is. Is that the dolphins are anarchists?
They're just wherever they swim is chaos.
Sure.
You know, and so it kind of works like that. Speaking of the internet, speaking of dolphin pornography, speaking of holes you can go down when looking for innocent things, and then the Google searches apparently make you look at, you know, depraved things. You're just looking for definitions of words. What's more innocent than that? And all of a sudden, you're watching cloture porn.
Sure. Yeah, it's the apple off the tree of knowledge, you know?
This is a quote.
Okay.
I love the internet because you can just find articles to support your argument and choose to ignore the ones you don't. Quote Sean Lewin, our mutual friend.
Yes, that is... I think that's probably very true. Obviously.
I know that that's true for conspiracies, because as you go down a rabbit hole of conspiracies that I've gone pretty far down, I'm to where, you know, the aliens are talking with the Scientologist aliens. Like, I'm really, like, figuring out who's running shit.
The elected body, they call them the loyal officers. They were there to protect the populations and so forth. And they had elected a fellow by the name of Zemu, could be spelled X-E-M-U, to the supreme ruler.
There is a predator race which take a reptilian form. They're feeding off humanity. They've turned humanity into a slave race They demand human sacrifice. That's where Satanism comes in. They feed off human energy, particularly feed off the energy of children.
And they were about to unelect him, and he took the last moments he had in office to really goof the floof. It was a suppressive, to end all suppressives. He got these administrators and so on, and heads of planets in various positions and places. He picked out all the cowboys in the white hat, and he got rid of them first, fast, and then troops, not knowing what the hell they were doing, but fed all kinds of false orders, were fed in against the population to pick them up, one after the other, one of the mechanisms they used was to tell him to come in for an income tax investigation. Had he tried to exteriorize from the body, there he was frozen.
What you need to do to understand what's going on, connect the dots. See, there are dots like banking, government, all these different things, 9-11, which in and of themselves are interesting, and you can see that something's not right. When you connect the dots between apparently unconnected people and situations and organizations, that's when the tapestry appears and you go, whoa. So that's what's happening.
So what I'm saying is, but I can look up things that only agree with me all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And I can further delude myself into a very niche cult on the internet.
Yeah, it's true. We're so very fragmented now. That you can, every single thing that you take in can be tailored. It used to be, I guess you can imagine a time where there would be like three TV channels and a couple of newspapers, and everybody's seeing the same things.
What about the good old days when it's like a Christmas story on VHS? You know that's gonna be good, so you're gonna watch that tape until it wears out.
Sure, and the whole family watches it together.
What's more perfect than that? Now everyone's fragmented. People don't even know what's good anymore. There's so much on the internet.
Yeah, it's an unfortunate time in some respects.
Disco music is made up of a lot of different instruments, I think.
Do you have nostalgia?
I don't know. I feel like at my age, it's really not right to say that I do yet. I don't think I'm old enough. You know what I always think of whenever someone says nostalgia? You know what nostalgia like means, or at least what it used to be?
What does it mean?
Well, it used to be that like nostalgia was the word for like if you had been in combat. And then years later, like, your wounds hurt you again. Like, that was nostalgia. Like, the pain from an old wound coming back at you.
Oh.
And so if you take it that way, then it's sort of a pejorative word, right? Like, nostalgia is inherently a bad thing, in a way.
Well, I tried to look up the definition of nostalgia for this interview, but then, you know, like, when I typed it into Google, you know what popped up? Nostalgia beheading, oh, drone God. Strikes. I don't want to watch that, but I'm gonna if there's a little video. What it magnifies that mustache any more than a Magnum P.I. costume?
Absolutely. Yeah, exactly. So I put together like a half-assed Magnum costume, and a friend was in costume as Captain N, the game master from the hit Saturday morning cartoon. And of course, you know, Magnum has a gun, and Captain N has a gun. So, you know, when two people with guns cross paths, you know, they have to throw down. And I like to think that Magnum acquitted himself well, you know.
Acquitted himself well.
Yeah.
See, your vocabulary is so much better than mine. What do you mean by that? He was ready.
You yeah, held his own. Yeah.
You think that Magnum, if that was a real encounter versus Captain N, the game master, that Magnum would have...
Yeah. Captain N is a fanciful character. Magnum lives in the real world.
Mm-hmm.
He's familiar with the harsh realities of Hawaii and all of its splendor. I think that he's probably going to be able to travel down some of those dark corridors, and in so doing, defeat Captain N.
He would be a dirtier fighter.
Well, he's principled, but he's also world weary. You know. as a Vietnam veteran, you know, not that in the show...
He's
like,
been in the shit.
He's done some tough stuff.
You know, so he wouldn't flinch.
No.
And he probably, like, sexually likes weird things.
I don't know how sexual Captain N is, and I think that could be his downfall.
Because he's more of a cartoon character.
Yeah, I think he had a love interest of some kind, but...
But you know Magnum P.I. is swinging dick if he's got, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Just to get over the PTSD of Vietnam.
Yeah.
He's got to get it on the regular to keep those the night terrors away.
And he's, you know, something that was always funny to me about Magnum was that he was constantly broke and putting off money he owed people, and yet he was so good-looking and charismatic that it didn't matter how broke he was. He was always getting the
ladies. He's a charmer.
Oh, sure.
You know? Even if he owes the ladies he's with a lot of
sure,
money.
And you know that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
Borrowing their car, probably making love to them in the backseat of it.
Mm-hmm.
Not gassing it up.
Because you know why? Because he would always be their seat. He'd just they'd be like, where would I sit down during this ride? And he's like, right here, baby. He just points to his mustache.
Walking right into that one.
Speaking of, you know, me and you were kind of like improvisers, comedians. We're very, very dedicated to that. And so, you know, you don't always know how we're doing with the ladies. But there's a picture of you at Skinny's with a bunch of strippers. And I see that you attend a roller derby.
That's true.
You know, so you're in that circle of really hardcore. Talk about women who aren't afraid to stick their pinky up your butt. You're going to find them at a roller derby. So how is Calder Hallbrook doing, you know?
Well, first let me stress that those were burlesque dancers. Very, very classy
stuff. At Skinny's NoHo.
At Skinny's.
They weren't strippers.
And so far I have not made any.
You were in a performance.
Yeah.
You were just attended a
I was a mere pawn in the machinations of these burlesque dancers.
Mm-hmm.
It's all quiet for me. I'm really a very timid guy, and you know, however it looks, I'm content for it to look that way because it's got to be more action than is the reality.
So, you know, you just every now and then you Google entertainment. I want to be entertained. I want to see what entertain, and then adult entertainment comes up. What is even that? Burlesque? That sounds like a performance. I'm a Toastmaster. I'm not going to a strip club. I'm classier than that.
Strip clubs are not as good as you might think that they would be, I think, when you're like 14.
I want to give a hint about my love life.
Okay.
A little thing that's going on. How many times in a row do you pee and it burns a little until you see a doctor?
I haven't had that experience yet, but I can say that I'm always very reluctant to see a doctor for any reason.
All right.
Busted leg or anything.
I'm going to make some phone calls before I get some test results. Jesus. Maybe I'll just drink a lot of cranberry juice today and see
oh,
if
sure.
it works out.
Yeah, if you've got a drug test at the same time, that also helps.
What do you mean? You were in a music video called De La Zoom.
Oh, De La Zoo is the name of the rapper.
Okay, it was called Alter Ego.
Oh,
was the song, right?
The song is Calm, Cool, Clean, I think is what it was called.
You were like the whole star of this music video.
I was pretty prominent in it, which I guess is atypical for a music video.
How did you and De La Zoom hook up?
Well, actually, this was something that came up through improv people. There was somebody who had known me in Monkey Butler classes, and he somehow got wind of the need for someone in this music video, which came together very, very quickly. And so he thought of me, which was very flattering, and I jumped into it. And so through that, I met the director and De La Zoo himself.
Wow, so he showed up late, though. Was it like he was fashionably late?
I was the first person there because of the way the shooting schedule worked out.
Right.
I it's very possible that they just assumed that he would only be able to roll in like mid afternoon or something. But
right, that's when he gets out of bed. He needs to charge up his rap.
Sure.
He can only blast it out at certain intervals.
Sure, sure. I'm the responsible one.
Yeah, but you showed up, and your dancing was pretty sick, man.
It was really fun to do in a way. It was also exhausting. They had a choreographer for me to teach me, and this was an indication of how uncoordinated I am, because they would show me these vintage like 80s moves.
That's right up your alley.
Well, you would think so. I would struggle to remember these moves for like the 10 minutes it would take to film it, and then an hour later they would want me to do the same one and I could not reproduce it, and I was like, oh man, these are 40-year-old moves. I can't imagine how I would do.
Well, they've withstood the test of time.
Oh, sure, sure.
It's not just any old moves off the internet. These were on VHS.
Yeah, we're not talking about a newcomer like fly-by-night dance like the Dougie or the Harlem Shuffle. Yeah,
those are kind of like fads.
Hey, where are they going to be in a year? Who's talking about them now?
Yeah, what's next? If you can't clap your ass together, you know what I mean? Like, those black chicks can't in those music videos.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and if I may, the dancers that we had in this De La Zoo video were pretty skilled.
Mm. But you were the front man. So,
yeah.
I mean, look at you. Now, a lot of times when you'll read a news story, what they don't tell you is what would happen in the court, because a lot of these news stories are people suing each other, police arresting somebody, and so because you're a toastmaster, that's also kind of like a lawyer, you know what I mean? You could be a lawyer. You got public speaking skills in the courtroom. So what we're going to do, I'm going to read off these news stories.
All right.
And then we're going to set the scenario of being opposing lawyers, and we're going to fight for a candidate.
Okay, I'll do my best.
Okay, you see what I'm saying?
Sure.
Police. Now, psychic gambled $115,000 she got from client. Of course, this took place in Boca Raton, Florida. A psychic took $115,000 from a client, promising to give her back $90,000. She's like, give me $90,000. Okay, you already gave me like $25,000. Just give me $90,000. I'm going to give it right back to you. But just spot me $90,000 now. That would be cool. Unbelievable. And so this was to remove a curse. So the psychic was like, you got a curse. Look, you gotta lend me $90,000 to even start to do this fucking ritual to get this curse off you. It's a real bad curse.
Oh, man.
So in September, 30-year-old Amanda Bertovsky told police she was a victim of fraud, stating that the psychic, Stephanie Lee, later identified as Stephanie Thompson. Bertovsky met Thompson in May 2012 in a psychic tea room and did a reading for $200 cash. That was the first. And then she got a curse, and she's like, okay, $2,000 for this curse. So that was $2,000. And then it just kept going. Then it was like another $10,000 for another curse, $74,000. And then pretty soon, it's like she took her out. She cleaned her out in a week. So you are going to be the lawyer of Stephanie Thompson, the psychic.
Okay.
I'm defending Amanda Bertovsky, the dupe. And opening statements.
Your Honor, members of the jury and the public, the vagaries of the mystical world are constantly shifting. And my client has undoubtedly made clear that while she has the inside track with what is going on in the supernatural realm of money, cursed or otherwise, it is impossible to say with absolute certainty whether or not such a gambit is going to be effective. The client of my client has brought this case against my client, not realizing the full implications of the contract that she embarked on. And if she feels now that she has not gotten a square deal, that is certainly not my client's concern.
Your Honor, may I say that a psychic losing my client's money gambling, frankly, disproves her ability as a psychic, and therefore cannot be fleecing my client for hundreds of thousands of dollars. Now, we're not suing for the full amount, just the $90,000 that she promised to give back.
Listen, this cursed money always had to be lost. My client
cursed money, Your Honor.
My client knew that that these gambles would not pay off. The entire purpose was to rid this woman of the cursed money.
You're saying the cash itself was the problem?
Yes. That's absolutely right. You'll find that money frequently has trace amounts of things like cocaine on it, and also curse.
I'd like to point out the fact that my client, your client, the psychic, at first, the first venue of there was the psychic tea room. Then you had your client had meetings with my client at Fifth Avenue shops, and then go to Bank of America to keep withdrawing money. So then they it wasn't good enough to just meet your client at the tea room. It was always at the bank.
The psychic conditions at the bank, I'm informed, proved to be superior to the tea room.
What I'm saying, was it particular money? Because when you go to the bank, you're not exactly sure which bills you're going to get.
Mm.
So how is your client sure that those particular bills that the bank was going to give you when you said, oh, let me withdraw, those exact ones were the cursed monies?
Well, in truth, it's impossible to know exactly which one of a person's bills is the cursed bill. So you really just have to keep churning through until you hit
it. You just got to keep taking them out.
That's absolutely right.
Okay. All right. Next news story. I see we're just warming up here.
Okay.
No charges to be filed against men accused of abducting women for exorcism. Another supernatural story here. So, two men accused of kidnapping a Stockholm woman, taking her to Bay Point, and having a priest perform an exorcism on her will not be facing any criminal charges. Now, kind of says it all there. So, two men, they said, hey, your problem, you got a demon in you, we're going to kidnap you. I know it sounds like kidnap. That sounds like a bad thing, but it's for your own immediate psychic help. We're taking you to a hospital for your soul, known as a priest. Stockton. This isn't Stockton, California. And then they're like, the judge is like, yeah, that's about right. That's not kidnapping if it's for that. But I mean, as long as they bring her back home, what is she lost in an afternoon? You know what I mean? Watching some guy throw water at her. It's not the biggest crime in the world, but what do you think?
Well, I mean, it's obviously the fact that their heart was in the right place.
That'd be terrifying, though. Imagine if you were walking down the street and someone threw you in a van and took you to a priest. How terrifying that would be.
Well, I mean, if you put a priest at the end of it, then yeah.
Yeah, but anything religious, like stealing you for something religious?
Some of that stuff is very, very strange. Like, I've read stories about, I don't know if it's like a splinter thing of the Church of Latter-day Saints, but the idea that, like, they'll do a ceremony to bring somebody into the Mormon faith after they're already dead. Like, they'll go to the grave. And they'll do a baptism there, which is really weird.
Yeah. Oh, my God. I'm so glad you brought up Mormonism. I had Brett Smith on for episode 52. He was talking a little bit about Mormonism. So I started looking at YouTube clips of Mormon temples and stuff. Do you know that they show, like, a video to the Mormons? Like, there's, like, they go to church in this, like, glorious-looking movie theater. And then, like, a screen opens. And then, like, a movie plays. And then, like, some, like, two, you know, 20-somethings are like, you know who my best pal is? Jesus. Because you know what happened when this happened? And then our leader, Joseph Smith, he taught us this. And they're just watching propaganda movies. It drives me insane that, like, some central body would make a movie. A movie! With fucking Avid editing machines or Final Cut editing machines. And then they're like, this movie that we made in 2011 is, like, perfectly... It's so good, it's religious, really. This is what you need to be looking... It's very disturbing. I don't know. You know what I mean?
When I was a kid going to church, I would have done anything for a movie. I was always bored stiff.
With its accompanying name and sign, have them return and bring me word. It shall be done, Elohim. Peter, James, and John, go down again to the telestial world. Instruct Adam and Eve and their posterity to change their robes to the right shoulder, preparatory to officiating in the ordinances of the Melchizedek priesthood, and introduce them into the terrestrial world. Give unto them the law of chastity, and put them under covenant to obey this law, which is that the daughters of Eve and the sons of Adam shall have no sexual relations except with their husbands or wives, to whom they are legally and lawfully wedded. Give unto them the first token of the Melchizedek priesthood, or sign of the nail, with its accompanying name and sign, and return and bring us word. It shall be done, Jehovah.
Well, they have a guy in the front doing this hand thing where it's like one hand is like down and one hand is up. And if you hand symbolism is very important in Freemasonic traditions, you know, because you would do a speech that's like, if I do any secrets against the Freemasonry, if I give out any Freemason secrets, may I be ripped in twain and have eagles eat my innards. And so that then to identify yourself as a Freemason on the street to another Freemason, you would do this hand symbol, right? And then there's a guy at the front of the Mormon temple doing that hand symbol while this before in like a ceremony before this propaganda movie plays. So because, you know, Joseph Smith, of course, was a Freemason and basically just took Christianity and Freemasonry, mixed it together with some underwear that's bulletproof, and you got Mormonism. And they're making new movies, though. That's, I don't know. That's,
hey, I mean, it sounds like a new idea to me, and there are all too few movies based on new ideas these days.
It is interesting. Like, what if the Catholics started making movies and been like, you know what, it's a little boring to have a guy up front, but it's like a live theater, little rich witchcraft ritual that they're doing, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Some kind of spiritual thing. How is that different than witchcraft? What do witches do? They fucking burn a candle and a little sage in a box.
Seems like mostly witches complain about people like misrepresenting what witches do. I don't know if there's anyone more humorless and hypersensitive than people who purport to be witches or Wiccans.
Sure. Read a fucking book. All right, people, do your own goddamn research.
Can't wait to read that book.
Hunter shoots robot, faces charges. Now, I've seen a show called, I don't know, it's about nature rangers. And what they do is they put these robot deers out there that their heads move around. You know, they have a little robot deer on a fucking remote control to, like, flick its tail to make it look real.
Uh-huh.
And then people are just driving by it, and they flash their light on it, and then they shoot it from their car. And then that's a ticket because you can't fucking shoot a car, like a deer from your car.
Uh-huh.
But they set up these stings all over the Midwest because people just pull over, shoot it, throw it in their truck, and then keep going.
Uh-huh.
And apparently you can't do that. You can't just like shoot a deer from a moving car. But that's what people love to do, you know, so.
Yeah, well, at the risk of saying anything prejudicial here, that sounds an awful lot like entrapment to me.
You know what I mean? Nah, I believe you there. If they put it like a 30-point duck buck, like the biggest deer ever.
Is that a lot? That's,
I don't know.
I mean, I know I understand that the more the better, I think.
Mm-hmm.
This is something I'm always frustrated by. Like, this is just a different version of like any like an episode of Cops where they set up the, like a prostitution sting and like a guy pulls over and he propositions her, and I'm just thinking, like, you know, he would have just gone home, right? Like he, if there had been nobody, no cop lady there,
uh-huh.
he would have gone home, and he probably would have, you know, committed a victimless act of self pleasure, and then that would have been the end of it. And I guess in this one, I don't know. I don't like that tactic, but I guess you got to keep those innocent deer from getting shot.
Yeah, what did the deer do? And I mean, if we learn one thing from Bambi. What did they do? You know, they're just trying to get to their mama.
I'll tell you this. So here's the risk that we run. If the only crime this guy is apparently guilty of having committed is, like, thinking that he shot a real deer, I'm worried that the robots are going to rise up because we're not pressing any charges against this guy for shooting a robot deer. You know
That's
what I mean?
True, yeah. Because, you know, we're going to... When we start making robots, they're already starting to have conferences of, like... When we make the first sentient computer consciousness, we gotta make a code of ethics so that it doesn't go crazy and have a Terminator scenario where it's like robots versus humans.
Oh, yeah.
But if they look back in the history of how we've treated robots, and then they go, oh, you shot a robot deer, there's no laws against shooting us, so why am I gonna, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
But can you kill a consciousness if you make AI?
I worry.
That's scary.
It is. It bears some thought.
Would you shoot a deer from a movie car?
I would probably stop the car for sure. Just to get a clear shot.
All right, let's do a... you're going to represent...
Okay.
The shooters. I'll represent the deer.
Okay. All right. Your Honor, members of the jury, you know, it is always when you don't have your gun that you see the perfect deer to shoot. Well, you know, many Pennsylvanians take care of that by constantly having their gun. And in this particular case, Your Honor, the true crime would have been not shooting this deer. This deer looked perfect. It had 100 points. It was poised right there by the side of the road, exposing the sweet spot right where you'd want to shoot it. And my client, the shooter, clearly heard words from the Lord God himself saying that this one was okay.
Your Honor, this lawyer is always bringing up spiritual things. I don't see how that's relevant to the case. Your Honor, first of all, let's just point out that, okay, what did a deer ever do to you, Your Honor? Huh? A deer ever run across the road, maybe scare you a few times when you're driving? That's not the deer's fault. It's trying to get to a different habitat. What I'm saying is, Your Honor, you can't legally let people turn over the side of the road and start shooting, like, you know, and on a highway system. That's not safe. How many hunters go, oh, that person was wearing a fur coat, I thought they were a bear. Oh, that person was wearing reflective headgear, I thought a bear took reflective headgear, and then they end up shooting a road worker. You know, if our own vice president shot someone in the face hunting pheasant, and so we can't, you know, people are too stupid to shoot from their car, and we gotta stop it.
Here's another point I'd like to bring up, Your Honor. My client is considering pressing charges against the state because this robot deer, being made of metal, easily could have caused the bullet to ricochet and hit him, killing or wounding him through no fault of his own, whereas a normal, real deer would not have caused such a ricochet.
Your Honor, would you entertain a notion by my opposing lawyer that there was no meat in the deer and he choked on a bunch of fuzz, just stuffing? No, that's ridiculous. Our robot deer was shot and injured. We had to get it fixed. So we will not press charges for that, but only for the crime of attempting to take out an endangered species out of season from the highway.
Your Honor, my client is willing to let bygones be bygones, but he does want the robot deer's head to mount on his mantle.
Your Honor, this is a picture of a dolphin having sex with a fish's body. I don't know if it's very relevant to the case, but I thought it was pretty hot.
I'm prepared to let that be admitted to evidence.
I've been going down some really rough internet holes lately, Your Honor. Just wanted to let you know what I found.
My client also conducted some very disturbing Google searches directly in advance of the incident in question, and so perhaps on that basis he may be excused.
He was just trying to look up vocabulary words for his opening statement.
That's absolutely correct.
And the Google keywords kind of brought him a different way.
It could have happened to anyone.
And to introduce you into the terrestrial world, you may now remove the robe and make the change. We now enter the terrestrial world. A couple will now come to the altar.
Look, if you go to... I got a show tomorrow, but this is going to... at the Comedy Store. This is going to air after it. But I'll always put where I'm doing stand-up. You go to ericollerbach.com, click tour dates. For some reason, there's a countdown thing at the front of my website. That stopped working. But if you always click tour dates, you'll see where I do stand-up. And, you know, my at the last show, Mark Maron showed up to the Comedy Store set. And I fucking did really good in front of him. So I'm pretty excited about that. I had a lot of... I got some new dick jokes. They're really doing good. Click through the Amazon link on the Highway Diary of Podbean. Do your Christmas shopping there. That would really help us out. Here comes Godot. Speaking of Christmas, We got a web series coming out Christmas. And we're polishing up 15 episodes of Here Comes Godot. So check out for that. Highway Diary made it to the comedy section of Podbean. You click comedy on Podbean and you got and we come up. So we're excited about that. And if anyone wants to send a tweet to my main man, Calder Hallbrook, that's Calder Hallbrook. You know, twitter.com/CalderHallbrook. Have you ever said a joke once and it went over just so terrible?
Not in the context of Toastmasters. I think I managed to do okay there. I have things happen. This is going back to the issue of how I do with women. So this is the stupidest, most like juvenile thing that happens. It'll be the thing where, just when I'm starting to do well, I think, and in the woman's estimation, maybe I'm starting to look okay, and then that is when I say something like awkward and terrible. And here's the thing, like where not that this was necessarily a thing that was going to turn romantic or anything. But you know, so like I'm chatting with some women and a friend of mine, and they're liking me, I'm liking them, and then suddenly, I decide to bring up the St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and it turns out they're not interested in discussing grisly gangland murders.
Mm-hmm. Especially when you're just like rubbing your fingers together and staring at them.
Oh man,
you know.
Yeah, so that's a case of me putting my foot in my mouth. It definitely does happen.
So do you think that they thought that you were going to murder them?
I don't think so. I think it was just an unseemly thing to bring up, and it was weird to them that I would say it.
Right.
I certainly hope they didn't think I would kill. For those listening, I do not kill.
You just beat them up a little. Sure. You just rough them up.
Well, when somebody has it coming, then I think it's only right.
Have you ever been in a fight?
Not really, no. In school, I think I was in a scuffle or two. Nothing serious. There was one incident once in class that a teacher broke up. And I felt very noble because this was
what
in...
happened?
Well, this was in... Not sixth grade. No, this must have been in high school. Maybe I was a sophomore or something. And one of, like, the way that the structure of this, I think this was like a history class or something. I don't quite remember. But I remember that it was the thing where they would have us in like pods, you know, so there would be four of us with desks pushed together. So those would be, like it or not, the people who you connected to for the duration
right.
of that class for that semester or
like
whatever
dolphins.
It was. Very much like dolphins. And so, like, there was one of the guys that was not so bad. Two of them were worse. One of them was especially worse than the other. And this one guy was making some kind of off-color jokes about the Holocaust or something.
Mm.
And I was probably a different person at the time. I was not remotely receptive to humor like that. At the moment now, I'm not about to make jokes like that, but I can see how people can take very objectionable subjects and do something with it. I don't feel like I can, but so in any case, he makes like some he's saying like terrible stuff
uh-huh.
about the Holocaust, and I just lose my cool all of a sudden and I lunge at him, and he's very ready to respond to that. But it never really got any further than that. I think it was one of those things where two people are sort of in a conflict, but neither one of them is actually prepared to like do anything for real. Like, I don't think a punch was going to happen if it lasted an hour.
Right. It was just more of a wrestling thing.
It was, yeah, or like a hockey fight or something, you know.
Are you a big booze hound? What's your vice?
I drink some. I get drunk every now and then, but I try to avoid it because the hangovers are getting worse as I get a little bit older.
Mm-hmm.
Drinking is about all I do. I don't do any drugs.
You don't strangle puppies?
No, but some people say that I'm not as nice to puppies as I could be.
Really? In what ways?
Well, you know, when sometimes you get too affectionate, I guess. Like if you're a little kid and you know, like you find a puppy and you're petting it really hard and you think you're being great to the puppy and the puppy is just desperate to get away from you.
Or it's got a big bone there. You ever you get too friendly with a puppy and then it starts weirding everybody out and you're like, hey girls, want to hear about the massacre? Why is the puppy's juice goes everywhere?
Boy, there's just so much a person can take.
That's annoying. You know, that's that's embarrassing at a cocktail party, you know, when you accidentally make the dog come and you were just trying to be friendly with it.
You know, probably you shouldn't bring the dog to the party to begin with.
Yeah. Especially if you know it's got, it's hung like a fucking,
you know what the
thing.
Story is on that dog. You're going to bring that dog anyway and somebody winds up getting in trouble through no fault of their own.
You know? Just sniffing in the wrong places. You know, maybe put peanut butter there. Maybe it didn't. Who knows?
I don't think dogs do that sort of thing the way a dolphin would particularly. Do you think that... Well, I guess...
What do you mean? Like, if there was, like, a chipmunk, would a dog fuck a chipmunk's body in half if it was...
I don't think so. I feel like I can imagine a dog, like, doing something in, like, a viable scenario. Like, that if there's any other dog... It would maybe try something, but I wonder if a dog just doesn't have the imagination of a dolphin where it could envision how, like, a non-viable sex partner.
My dog used to, like, it had this bed and it would turn it over and hump it the hell out of its bed.
Yeah, I guess I can see that. I don't know what...
They do make inanimate objects lovers.
I guess I can get that. I wonder if there's, like, a smell to it or something that triggers the dog.
A body's rough, though, using an actual body. But I think in the sea, you know, because there's, like, salt in the water, that would kind of, like, sterilize it in a way where if there was, like, something on land that was in half, it would probably all be all covered in bacteria.
Yeah, that'd be pretty tough.
And then you start peeing, and it hurts when you pee a little bit, and you're not sure, like, when to go to your doctor. So, What's coming up next for you? Do you have any thing to promote or anything like that?
There are a few things that are going on. I've been lately submitting jokes to the Top Story Weekly show on Sunday nights at IO West, which has been very cool. I'm also performing at irregular times with my Monkey Butler team, The Barrel, and with my other team, Mrs. Belvedere. So if you spot that name or The Barrel on a program somewhere, you should probably check that out.
I remember doing improv and doing comedy in general. I kind of feel closest to, like, what a spiritual thing is. Like, you know, because you're doing that twice a week, three times a week, rehearsing and doing it all. It's like that is a big commitment to so that's almost like your religion is improv. It's the proof that you can do anything. If you want to, like, be a dog from space or a Frankenstein lawyer or whatever you want to be, you could do it at improv, you know?
I think that people don't have a lot of tolerance for anyone who starts getting serious, super serious about something like comedy or trying to make its value to humanity into, like, a lot more than it is. But at a base level, what you're trying to do is to, like, take unhappiness or pain or suffering and in some small modest way to ease it with some form
of
truth.
You didn't think about this way to look at it. And also, like, you know, it can help with social reform, because when you hear a really good joke, when you hear Jon Stewart just rip up something like the corruption of a bureaucrat or something where it's just so clear that you know, the logic of jokes sometimes can help people's, like, whole souls change their mind and evolve on, you know,
yeah, it's
on
true.
Something.
There's a real impact. It's like what they would call, like, the role of the fool or the jester, the only person who could call out the king on what he's done.
Yeah,
which is pretty neat. So I pull a handy, tell me how I do that though when not a person understand me.
Nobody try to comprehend half of the shit I'm spitting. I can just say blah 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 blah. Okay, I saw this movie recently where they depicted how the Iraq war is basically done in the Afghanistan war. What they do is they drive Humvees through on peace missions. And then if anyone shoots at these Humvees or puts a bomb on the ground, then they go, "Oh, that's the Taliban." And then they shoot back. But a Taliban is anyone in a small independent city who doesn't want Humvees rolling through. And they got some nutty religion, so they're gonna shoot at people thinking that they're gonna be martyred into some kind of afterlife based on their nutty religion. And the fact that they have nothing, and there's just a desert with, like, these brick buildings that they live in, these shitholes, and they're fucking nuts. And then if you were gonna actually send a peace mission through, wouldn't it look more like a marching band or a parade or midgets doing backflips or some kind of like marching band? If they got shot, then it's like, okay, well, the Taliban's are assholes. But why send a fucking marching band in? Like, but if you were going to steal oil, then maybe you would bring the Humvees. Maybe you'd bring the tanks. Maybe that would be, like, the method of freedom instead of hospitals and fucking schools. Maybe bring tanks and Humvees instead of a marching band. I don't know. I just think if you're trying to spread freedom and happiness, you could brought the wrong cavalry, you know what I mean? So
I'm not much for marching bands myself.
I'm sorry to get a little political, but I just think that you should, you know, maybe bring some kids with silly string or whatever, hand out silly string, you know, it'd be fun. Then we would connect with these people and be their friends.
Yeah, oh yeah, nothing would do that more than silly string.
I don't know, bridge the gap. Some fireworks.
Sure, fireworks.
Well, that would probably put them on edge.
Well, yeah, I think that, yeah, too many bad associations, maybe.
But, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, I guess I get it, yeah. It's,
just be nice to them, apples.
Yeah, peace, what did you say, peace march? Is that what you parade. Said before? That was the word you used for the Humvees?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. This is like a peace operation.
Peace, yeah.
And then they just roll through the town, the middle of the town. And when they get shot at, or like an IED explodes and blows up one of their Humvees, they're like, oh, that's the Taliban. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Oh, there's 5 Taliban. No, those are 5 farmers with guns who are saying, get out of our fucking neighborhood.
Yeah, I think that's like, you think that you're a creative person who's engaging in some really interesting like art or whatever, but I don't know if I can compare to the people who come up with euphemisms like that. Like, that's really clever.
What do you mean?
Well, like you take something that's obviously not exactly a peaceful act, like patrolling like with armed, presumably armed Humvees, and you just used to say that's a peace patrol.
Well, that's just that is the fucking crazy double talk that the Pentagon gets away with.
WikiLeaks has made no such request directly to the Department of Defense. These documents are the property of the U.S. government and contain classified and sensitive information. The Defense Department demands that WikiLeaks return immediately to the U.S. government all versions of documents obtained directly or indirectly from the Department of Defense databases or records. WikiLeaks' public disclosure last week of a large number of our documents has already threatened the safety of our troops, our allies, and Afghan citizens who are working with us to help bring about peace and stability in that part of the world.
Then you Google the Pentagon and you find all this Pentagon porn.
You know, they're making it. You think that they're, like, in there, like, with their documents and like, looking at, oh, this is our battle statistics. No, they're fucking each other in uniform, and they're putting it on the internet. They got to revenue generate somehow. How do you think they get funding for all those black ops projects?
Oh, man. But, you know, yeah, the Pentagon porn is behind a paywall for sure.
Yeah. they're funding black ops with black cocks. cool, man. Well, it's been a pleasure. Let's say goodbye to these nice people.
Goodbye, nice people. Stay nice.
That's been another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag with my guest, Calder Hallbrook.
Nighty night.
Cool, man.